This is Scott Berguin of KSOW-LP in Cottage Grove, Oregon. We are talking on the phone with Jerry Levin, who's a former CNN bureau chief in Beirut, and during the mid-1980s was held hostage for almost a year in Beirut, and now Jerry is turning that experience, I suppose, into working with the Christian Peacemaker team in Hebron on the West Bank. And it's great to have you, Jerry. Hello.
Hello.
Jerry, you, of course, are in Oregon right now. Is that right?
Yes, I am. I'm in Portland, Oregon.
Okay, and I know you have a list of speaking tours that you're doing with your wife, Sis.
That's right.
Salem, Portland, and then Vancouver, Washington, and maybe some others in between there?
That's right. And she's right here with me if you want to talk with her also, because we are a team.
All right.
And what we do is complementary. What we talk about and show is complementary with each other, which is the whole subject of nonviolence and its importance in dealing with the problems of the world. It's something that, despite the pot calling the kettle black, that our own nation, our own governments have not quite absorbed or tried to put it into practice themselves.
Right. Well, team seems to be the operative word here with the Christian Peacemaker team. And of course, has been in the news of late. I guess it's sort of a mixture of it's bittersweet, tragedy, and release, I guess. But it's also, of course, have the situation in Iraq with the Christian Peacemaker Team 4 that were abducted. Tragically, Tom Fox was murdered.
That's right.
We're also right at the year anniversary. I don't think she was not part of the Christian Peacemaker Team, but Marla Ruzicka in Iraq was killed about a year ago. She worked for Civic. And, of course, we're also near the anniversary of Rachel Corrie being killed.
All of them are martyrs, if you will.
Right.
The sad fact that where violence, the use of violence is concerned to deal with these terrible, terrible issues, that the violence of the so-called good guys is just as bad as the violence of the so-called good guy, bad guys, too.
Violence is violence.
Violence is violence,
right.
And it's futile. And in the long term, even the victors find out that if they have used violence, and especially the violence of terror, which our own government has used in Iraq, the killing of innocent people, detentions without charges and what have you, that even though they think they have somehow won, they haven't, because the problems they think that they have solved simply come back to haunt us in one way or form or another in the years that go ahead. And of course, we have a situation of instability and violent mayhem, infinitely worse in every measurable degree than before we invaded Iraq. And that includes the horrible violence perpetrated by Saddam Hussein.
Correct.
Bad enough.
Right.
But we've simply escalated the numbers to an unconscionable amount.
Well, it seems, and I'm guessing you would agree with this, that we society, Western society, any society in general, seems to not have learned from the fact that it seems like, I don't know where this comes from, but violence begats violence, that it just makes, obviously, the situation worse, and no better example right now than what's going on in Iraq.
Well, there's no better example also than what's going on in Palestine.
Certainly, yes.
The problem is, in Palestine, the violence and the reasons for the violence is erroneously and deceitfully in the West laid at the feet of the Palestinians, always at the feet of the Palestinians, when in fact it's the perpetuation of the occupation of the West Bank, and the continual eroding of Palestinian land, confiscating it by the Israelis, pulling it into the settlements and eventually into Israel, that is the major cause for the violence of resistance, which, however, is quite small in terms of the mass of Palestinian resistance non-violent resistance, which has taken place over the decades, which has so infuriated the Israelis, because the non-violent resistance on the Palestinians' part is to not accept the occupation and to do what many Israelis would like them to do, is simply get up and leave. basically it's been nonviolence. The tragedy of the Western view of the violence and the situation and the occupation in Palestine is that in the mainstream press, rarely do you ever hear the word occupation even mentioned or written.
Mm-hmm.
It's always written from the point of view that the problem is Palestinian terror.
Right.
Well, in the aggregate, essentially the main problem is the occupation, which sometimes regretfully breaks out into terror and not the legitimate form of armed resistance that takes place. But basically the armed resistance and the terror by the Palestinians has been quite small compared to what is taking place in other and other parts of the Middle East, and also quite small in comparison to the type of brutalities that the Israeli army and the settlers have been perpetrating in the West Bank for over 40 years. The numbers of Palestinians affected in terms of life, livelihood, economic survival, social humiliation, cultural diminution has been gigantic compared to what's happened to the Israelis.
Well, you make a fantastic point, a very important point. I think that many of us, unfortunately, haven't become aware of the sort of domination of the, we'll call it the government view of things until the Iraq War.
Well, how can you be aware when the mainstream press, the most of the organs of information to which we've grown up and used to and would like to trust, have not been telling the story, honestly. They tell it from the Israeli point of view, and therefore they the people don't, as I say, don't understand that what is the initial cause of the terrible and painful situation there is an occupation that doesn't end. The so-called Oslo peace process, spelled P-E-A-C-E, as far as Palestine has been concerned, has been a P-I-E-C-E process. The moment the agreement was signed 12 or 13 years ago, the Israelis continued to build settlements, continued to move settlers in, continued to act to attack Palestinian farmers, continued to attack Palestinian children trying to get to school, continued to expand the boundaries of each settlement in the West Bank by a few hundred yards every few months and taking more and more Palestinian land. And that's the story that is not told very, very well in our mainstream press. I leave it to you and your audience to decide why. But
right.
I think to begin with, it's deceitful, and to end with, dishonest.
So basically there's at least two distortions that are not getting to most Americans in this case, and that is, as you mentioned earlier,
the occupation and then the nonviolent resistance
that's happening on a regular basis.
Right. The occupation is the elephant in the room that our government does not want to admit is there, and our mainstream press does not do a very good job of describing. It's not Palestinian terror, which is unacceptable. I'm against violence of any kind. I'm against the violence of warfare. But it's understandable, and it's comprehensible, especially the legitimate armed resistance that takes place from some time.
Right.
But again, it's the occupation, the occupation, the occupation.
Right. Well, Jerry, let's, I suppose, back up just a little bit here. I'm interested in how does Jerry Levin, once working for the CNN, held hostage, as it says, for almost a year, and maybe Sis wants to chime in here somewhere, because I know
she
played a very important role in this whole process, but how does one, yourself, get from that point, being held hostage, to then making the decision to become part of the peacemaking process as opposed to the generating more fear and hate?
I'm going to give you to Sis, who will tell that part of the story first, and then I can answer next. She wants to know, how do we get from the hostage situation to being peacemakers in Palestine and Israel?
I'm trying to get my mind around that.
Thank you for joining us, first of all, Sis.
Sure.
This is Sis Levin, married to Jerry, who we were, of course, speaking to before. And I want to know, because I know you played a very important role in the whole process of getting Jerry freed, for one, and then you're obviously been an important part in this, going from that to becoming peacemakers.
Let me see if I can put it into a couple of sentences. A Southern Christian conservative fell madly in love with and wanted to marry a Yankee liberal Jew in broadcast journalism, and did, and found herself in a mostly Muslim country in the middle of a civil war.
Speaking of Lebanon, right?
That was 22 years ago.
Okay.
I was a postulant in the Episcopal Church. I was going to be an Episcopal priest.
Mm-hmm.
Jerry was kidnapped and held hostage, and the problem very clearly was in Washington. Very clearly.
So that was pretty obvious to you right from the beginning?
To anybody who was there.
Uh-huh.
Everybody was killing everybody else, including the fact that the battleship New Jersey steamed into the harbor and was firing into Lebanon. And we never declared war on Lebanon. We never even discussed it. But it was clear. Israel had invaded Lebanon, driven all the way to Beirut, killing civilians as they went. The so-called Christian army, the Phalange, had massacred the Palestinians in the refugee camps, women and children. And then, you know, America came into it, killing everybody. So everybody was killing everybody else, and everybody thought they were right. When Jerry was kidnapped and held hostage, it was a part of what became known later as Iran-Contra hostage scandal.
Mm.
And it was because, in spite of the fact that the peace people, the Quakers, and Christians, Muslims, and Jews were able to bring Jerry out nonviolently, and they were all, the Americans were all held in the same house by the same people for the same reason, the President of the United States sent Oliver North to Tehran with arms for the Ayatollah and the money for the support for the Contras, which we had said we did not want to do in America. He did it anyway. So it just threw kerosene on a fire that was already blazing, Israel's driving into Lebanon and Israel's going after the Palestinians. That was something that could have been worked on very, very differently, but it wasn't. And we've been going down that road ever since. The path from Beirut to Baghdad is a very clear path, a very predictable path, and it looks like Iran is next. We just do not buy into the solving of conflicts nonviolently, and it can be done, and we have proof that it can be done and has been done, but we choose the other path. In my case, watching that happen and seeing, you know, the uniqueness of Jerry's rescue, while the others were traded for arms and held, Terry Anderson, who replaced Jerry, was held for 7 years, and the misleading of that path. I came out of seminary, and I went to Columbia and did a master's and then a doctorate in the pedagogical side of it.
Mm-hmm.
How do you teach peace building? Not how do you talk about it or write books about it or try to influence congressmen, but how do you teach it? Because I'm convinced we've messed up this world, and our children deserve better than that. And the other thing is, violence is out of control among children all over the world, certainly in America. And the tragedy to me in the Middle East is the Israeli children are picking up on revenge, and this all belongs to us.
Mm-hmm.
The Palestinian children, because after 40 years of strict and brutal military occupation, are buying a different approach. They believe this will end. They believe this will end. And when it does, who are they? Are they going to go for revenge? Are they going to go for a form of security that means controlling other people militarily? I think not.
Mm-hmm.
They're talking about that road is the wrong road. We want true democracy. They haven't seen much of an example of true democracy. We want to be a people who doesn't solve their problems by military means. And they're very wise and patient about that. They have instances of suicide bombing, and they firmly condemn them. That's a trap. Violence is a trap.
Mm-hmm.
You hit me, I hit you back. We're both falling in a ditch.
Mm-hmm.
So we study Gandhi and Martin Luther King, and we talk critically because we are allowed to, and we're not trying to enlist the fourth grade in the ROTC, you know, for a future army of Palestine.
Mm-hmm.
We're just, it's a very unique situation. In spite of all that suffering, they seem clearly determined to be a people of nonviolence, and I just hope that others will look at that. You don't hear it discussed. The media is not covering it. You're not hearing these stories or seeing it. But we have scholars coming from all over the world to look at this model in Bethlehem. My university students say, you tell us to think outside the box. Well, it's gotten ridiculous. Bethlehem is completely enclosed by a 29-foot high, 6-foot thick concrete wall with one gate.
Mm.
We're boxed in.
One gate?
Yes, sir.
Wow. Okay, well, since you mentioned it, I'll mention that you work with Children of Abraham Peace Teaching Project in Bethlehem. Is that the right?
The Children of Abraham is the American support group.
Okay.
Made up of Christians, Muslims, and Jews.
Mm-hmm.
Who consider the way out of this educating for peace, because our teachers are not trained to educate this way anywhere, especially in America. The teachers all tell you quickly, we're teaching the test.
Mm-hmm.
Success in America is making a good grade on the test and the cream of the crop going to the eastern, you know, colleges.
Mm-hmm.
And the rest are turning into cannon fodder as we turn more and more into a military society. But this way of teaching for life, for a different kind of life, and truly for democracy, real democracy and human rights, is a very different way to teach. So the key is training teachers. And the other key is systemically. It has to be kindergarten through college. Anything less than that is a Band-Aid. And they're well-meaning programs, you know, after-school peace clubs and conflict resolution in the fifth grade and so on. If it isn't systemic, kindergarten through college, it's not sustainable. And that those are the hard facts and the tragic facts, because a lot of money has been being spent by well-meaning people on peace programs. They don't sustain, they don't change the whole school and by fallout the whole neighborhood. You know, we're having marvelous results where it is being done, but it needs to be looked at and bought into and understood. And that can be done if we'll just talk out loud about it.
Mm-hmm. Well,
and we appreciate you doing that.
Well, what I hear is, you know, to condense it way down, is one is for both of you, from my view, a heroic response to a very, very difficult situation. And tell you the truth, it is akin to me of more recently of those people who had family members and friends in the World Trade Center, and they chose to respond to that by calling for peace and working for peace as opposed to vengeance.
Of course.
And these are heroic acts, and it seems like we have the great distorted story is that about the occupation, that it's never called that, as Jerry so aptly put, but also the great untold story, which is this preponderance of nonviolent response in Palestine to building the future, that if that was even covered more than it is, that could create amazing things in terms of hope and so on.
Well, bless your heart. And I think really if people who love Israel as I do could only understand what my colleagues there say, if you really loved us, you would not refuse the honest critical thinking about our situation. You would talk out loud about it. Israel has weapons of mass destruction. Israel has people upset enough to use them. Israel has suffered horribly, and somehow the government certainly has gotten this idea that the only answer, the only security, is to take the land away from someone else and keep them under unfisted control. I have students in Israel who say it looks like the abused child became an abuser, mm-hmm. and that happens without healing, without understanding of the cycle of violence, and the only way out of this is nonviolence, which has to be learned. It isn't just theory, it's practice.
Well, it may also be that it's a very simple reason why the violence continues, is that we know that a very basic part of nonviolence is truth-seeking.
Absolutely.
And if you're really seeking the truth, obviously, the distortions, the lies, whatever would have to be exposed.
Yeah, and it's a trap. It's really a trap. So it's hard to tell the truth, and the more you lie, the more you become involved in a lie, and you lose the truth. The truth also is that we did not, as a country, come to the aid of the Jews in Europe. Mm-hmm. Hitler was a seminarian, a baptized Christian. Give me a break.
Mm-hmm.
I had a German minister who came and sat in on classes in Palestine, and he said, if we had had education like this in Germany, Hitler could never have risen to power.
Mm-hmm.
It's high time we do this in America. It's high time we do this everywhere instead of going down the road we're going down.
Mm-hmm.
And little children, when I lecture in America, will say to me, but Dr. Levin, if we had this kind of education in our schools, the president couldn't raise his army. Well, that's a thought, isn't it?
That is a good thought, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
What about an army for peace?
Yes, and well, of course that is unfortunately, too small a scale, but it's certainly a very powerful scale. That's certainly what Christian peacemaker teams are.
Indeed. But the education side of it, I have to underline, is an even smaller group. Educators for peace are even smaller, but persistent, because we know what we know, and we know it works. Bottom line, it works, and it can work. So it's wonderful to be able to talk to you like this, and I hope people are listening.
Well,
out of control.
Yes.
Violence is the number one health problem among children in the world, and the medical world is coming over to our side, and the doctors are saying, look, we can sew them up in the emergency room, or if the teachers have been trained to identify the child at risk, we can get counseling, but prevention is in the schools, kindergarten through college, with trained teachers.
Mm-hmm.
That's prevention, and we better get at it.
Right. It's a massive commitment, but one that is of the ultimate importance.
It is so gratifying, too, and so wonderful to see the turnaround. That's
right.
What life is about.
Right. And I don't want to seem flippant, but I'm turning my mind back to Jerry, and I can imagine, I don't think you guys are telling the truth about what happened in Lebanon. I think you, sis, just walked in with the power that the force that I'm feeling coming from you, and just walked in and grabbed him and took him out.
I'm glad it wasn't that simple, because the methodology that I studied watching them do that, how the principle of shared needs was involved, the methodology changed my life forever. And I went back and, as I said, did the master's and the doctorate. It's hard work.
Yes, yes.
But it makes sense, and it works, and it changes the attitude and the outlook of students and of children, and they deserve that. They deserve better than they're getting.
So what, if I hear what you're saying correctly, at least about the going back to the release of Jerry from being a hostage in Lebanon, is that there was it's like nonviolent communication, a nonviolent process that went on of negotiating.
Absolutely.
That looked at the needs of both sides,
mm-hmm.
and concerns and so on, and ended in the peaceful release of Jerry. And were there others at that time?
Oh, they were all held in the same house.
Okay, that's right.
For the same reason. And the president, in full knowledge that the only Jew was brought out by nonviolent communication,
mm-hmm.
sent Oliver North to Tehran with arms for the Ayatollah,
mm-hmm.
which complicated it
right.
much further. More
yes.
were taken. But it was the same problem.
Mm-hmm.
Oliver North and I had the same problem to solve. His excuse, incididently, and he lasts all the way to the bank and he lectures, his excuse was, I was only following orders,
mm-hmm.
to which my students replied, didn't we settle that at Nuremberg?
Right.
That is no excuse.
Right, that is no excuse.
And we've got to change that. And
okay.
I believe we will, with help like yours.
Well, I'm more excited now about having talked to the both of you than I was initially. I mean, it's an incredible message that you're bringing forward, and I think very hopeful.
Well,
for
it's
a lot
all of us, isn't it?
Right, it is. And
read my book.
Read your book. What is your book?
I kept a diary.
Mm-hmm.
So InterVarsity Christian Fellowship Press brought my diary out, and
mm-hmm.
it was a bestseller,
mm-hmm.
and it paid for my doctorate.
Okay.
And then Marlo Thomas made the movie from the book, and it still runs on NPR, public television.
Okay, so what is the name of the book?
The name of the book is Beirut Diary.
Beirut Diary, okay. And where can, what's the easiest way to get it, would you say?
If you will get in touch with me, we have a few left. It's
mm-hmm.
sold out, and we're negotiating an updated paperback. But
mm-hmm.
my email is drsis, Dr. Sis, drsis2@yahoo.com.
Okay, great.
And the group, the Children of Abraham,
mm-hmm.
will send you a book and also send you a DVD of the movie if you like. The movie is quite wonderful. It's the Middle East for dummies because, you know, this woman came into the dysfunctioning family of Abraham and had to understand it
mm-hmm.
because they had kidnapped Jerry. And
mm-hmm.
so it helps you place the player in history and see the direction that we took, and hopefully we'll compel you there's a better way to go.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you very much, sis. And
you
if you
bet.
Don't mind, let's get back to Jerry, and I'll have him maybe run down what your itinerary is here for folks that may have a chance to join you at one of those locations.
You bet. He's right here. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi.
Welcome back, Jerry.
Yeah.
again, for folks who are listening, this is Jerry Levin of Christian Peacemaker Team, and we just had a powerful discussion with your wife, Sis, and we're getting close to running out of time here, and what I'd like to do, Jerry, if you don't mind, is have you tell people a little bit about what you're currently involved in now in terms of your kind of speaking tour, in case there's some folks that might be able to make it to some of these events.
You know, we started out in our home base of Birmingham, Alabama. We got in our car and we kept going. We left near the end of March, and like I say, another week and a half we'll be in the Pacific Northwest.
Mm-hmm.
Then we start across the northern tier of states and then back down through the Midwest.
All right.
So it's quite extensive, and basically our subject that we're dealing with is the whole issue of nonviolence and what I call. And what I said earlier was what I call the PIECE process continues. Not
right.
a true peace process,
right.
but a PIECE process that is continuing to whittle away the West Bank. And I deal with it from the perspective of what I call the myths, the propaganda, the violence, and the annexation that is continuing there,
mm-hmm.
and which is hardly dealt with in an honest, not just a balanced way, but in an honest way by most of the mainstream press and certainly our current administration and U.S. administration is going back almost 40 years.
Right. So How would you describe the response you're getting so far?
Well, the response is always very, very good. Obviously, with the content of our presentations, we don't get invited to Israel right or wrong synagogues.
Mm-hmm.
We don't get invited to very, very right-wing, very, very conservative Christian churches who for... rather dubious eschatological beliefs support an Israel right or wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And despite what's happening to fellow Christians who are Arabs in the Middle East, care much more about having Israel, the Israelis, whether they're religious Israelis or not, ruling a good part of the Middle East, so at the appropriate time they can all die in the last great scriptural battle that's predicted,
right?
You know, at the end of the New Testament. So it's right. A pretty cynical kind of support.
Mm-hmm.
Because of course the Christians know that these very, very conservative Christians do know that the current government of Israel is not religious, although it depends somewhat on the support of some religious parties, but is basically secular, has no religious belief, but is very happy to accept its support no matter where it comes from. So it's a case of what I call scriptural politics making strange bedfellows.
Uh-huh.
But the tragedy of this Christian support on the right of the Israelis, no matter what they do, no matter that there's a terrible oppression going on, the tragedy is that Christian Arabs are suffering because of this very selfish and cynical support by Christians of the right in the United States.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, we're unfortunately going to have to end it there. I do appreciate the two of you not only coming on, but the effort you're putting out. And as I said to Sis, I truly believe, this is honestly believe, that what you have managed to do, the two of you, and of course the people that work with you, but what individually you've managed to do to take your experience and turn it into, you know, acting, pushing for true peace and nonviolence,
yep,
is definitely one of the more heroic acts I have heard of recently. So,
well, it's very, very kind of you to put it that way. We don't think of ourselves as heroes.
Well, I'm sure you don't. Yes.
And we think of ourselves as servants.
Sure.
And servants of a better world.
Mm-hmm.
And servants of an ethic that does not condone violence, but condones all the efforts needed to arrive at living together peacefully.
Mm-hmm. Well, again, thank you, Jerry, and please thank Sis for me, and the best of luck and whatever it takes along the way.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Take care.
Bye-bye.
We were talking to Jerry and Sis Levin. Jerry is a former CNN bureau chief from Beirut who was held hostage for almost a year in Lebanon. And Sis, his wife, who was instrumental in his release back in the 1980s, and they, of course, both now are working both with Christian Peacemaker Team, and Sis is working in Bethlehem, with the Abraham Peace Teaching Project, trying to bring wage peace and nonviolence in the Holy Land. We thank them.
The schedule of events that Jerry and Sis are going to be participating in start tomorrow, Tuesday, April 18th, 7 p.m. in Salem, at Jason Lee United Methodist Church, 820 Jefferson Street Northeast. Then the next day, Wednesday, April 19th at 7 p.m. also, Trinity Episcopal Cathedral, 147 Northwest 19th Avenue. Again, that's in Portland. And then on Thursday, April 20th at 2:50 p.m. in Vancouver, the Washington State University in Vancouver at 14204 Northeast Salmon Creek Avenue, in the Multimedia Center there at the Washington State Campus in Vancouver, Washington. For more information on where the Levins will be speaking and the rest of their tour in the Pacific Northwest, but also continuing across the northern tier of the country, you can contact Sis at her email address, drsis2@yahoo.com. That's drsis2@yahoo.com. I'd like to thank Sister Elaine Kelly of Friends of Sabeel in North America for setting up this interview. You can contact her at 503-653-6625 or on email at friends@sabeel.org. Sabeel is spelled S-A-B-E-E-L. If you want more information on their efforts and activities, you can contact them at www.fosna.org. That's in the United States. In Canada, it's www.sabeel.ca. And in Jerusalem, www.sabeel.org. This is Scott Berguin of KSOW LP in Cottage Grove, Oregon.